Who actually takes the time to read a foreword? Title page, yeah, whatever. Imprint, who cares? Foreword, table of contents, ha. So here I look up my topic and turn to the right page. Boom, don't have much time. Just want to get to the point. Well, that's okay for a math textbook, but not for a standard.
Human beings are not ants. Unlike our tiny friends, we don't naturally know how to live together in large groups. This is why we need rules. And besides political rules, we also have technical rules, also known as standardization. It's actually one of our democratic rights to contribute to shape these rules. In this podcast, I will not tell you what you really should know about standardization. Because Amelie Leibrand will.
Welcome back to our little series, Human Beings Are Not Ants, what you never wanted to know about standardization, but definitely should know. My name is Amelie, and I'm happy that you've joined me here again today. I've already talked quite a lot about standardization, what standardization actually is, and what DEAN actually does. If you missed the first season, just go back and listen. This stuff doesn't get out of date very fast. These are the things you need to know if you want to write or update standards yourself. This you don't do all that often. What you do much more often is apply or use a standard. In other words, the standard is already there and now I want to use it in real life. This is what I'm going to talk about today. So first of all, what does it mean to apply a standard? Well, it can mean a lot of different things. For example, I may want to produce something that fits into a certain system. Screws, for example, or plugs, sockets, things like that. Then I take the relevant standard, look at how big I have to make the thing, how much current flows through where, or what incline my thread has to have, and so on. Meaning, I apply the standard in the sense that I adapt my production to whatever is described in it. But I can also apply a standard by checking, for example, whether someone else has really made something according to standard if they make this claim. To do this, I take the standard and the thing that has been produced and I look to see whether the product meets the specific requirements of the standard. I can check my own company's products this way, for example, if I'm responsible for my company's quality management. Or I can do it with the products of a supplier company or as a neutral third party. Then you call this process certification. Let me explain. Certification is when a neutral third party verifies that a product or service fulfills certain requirements. Now, these requirements may very well be found in a DEAN document, but they don't have to be. Who is this third party? Well, the first party is the one who produces the product. The second party would be like in this supplier company example. In other words, not the producer themselves, but still directly involved. And a neutral third party has nothing to do with either of them, and thus no interest of its own, neither in being particularly lenient nor particularly strict, but simply going by the book. So, to summarize, certification does belong in the world of technical regulation, but has nothing to do with standardization directly. Rather, it's a possible application of a standard. And DEAN does not certify. Yes, it's true. If it says tested according to DEAN somewhere, then it has been tested in accordance with a DEAN standard, not by DEAN. DEAN has nothing to do with certification, even if this remains one of the most popular DEAN myths. DEAN makes standardization possible, period. Now, back to the applications. I can also apply a standard by considering the idea, for example, that I would like to expand my company, preferably worldwide. Then I can take a look at what ISO documents there are in my area. Maybe I realize, oh great, the current ISO standard is based on a DEAN standard that my company knows well. We've been following it for a long time anyway. Cool. But I could also discover, oops, apparently only in Germany does a certain production method, for example, seem to be customary. The rest of the world has been following an ISO standard for a long time, perhaps based on an American or Chinese document of origin. if I want to survive in the world on the long term, I may have to adjust my production method. And maybe I want to send someone from my team to the relevant standards committee. For one, I can find out much earlier what's going on in my field worldwide. And I can also try to introduce our own achievements into standardization. Then we will soon be the ones out ahead of the others and not the other way around. I can also apply a standard by offering consulting services based on a standard. I can offer training courses based on standards. I can do research and find out what the official state of the art is in my field. Or, as an architect, I may have received an unpleasant email from a subcontractor. You planned the stairs wrong and now everyone is bumping their heads, but we will fix that for you, for an additional charge, of course. So then I take a deep breath, look up in the standard how to design a staircase with proper dimensions correctly, and lo and behold, I had done everything right. You won't be fixing anything. Enough with your demands, okay? Or maybe I want to sell a product in the EU. And to do so, I have to comply with EU directives or regulations. There are often standards that can help me. I can make it easy for myself and simply comply with the standard. Then it's assumed that I have also complied with the associated EU directive or regulation. Fun fact, just as a side note. I am required to comply with the EU directive or regulation, not the standard. The standard helps me to do so. If I think the standard is nonsense, I am free to develop my own method of complying with the directive or regulation. Yes, if push comes to shove, I do need to be able to prove that my method worked. And no, that is not totally annoying, but rather the task of a court to investigate in case of such a situation. It would be a bit strange if the court would say, oh, you didn't do it according to the standard, you had a better method, oh well, then everything is fine. This means that I can also apply a standard as a person practicing law. As you have likely noticed, there are many different ways to be actively involved in standards. And they definitely do not only concern engineers. So, applying a standard usually begins with me reading the standard. And reading is only useful if I understand what's in there. No, I'm not going to guide you through all the standards that we have at DIN. That is more than 34,000 documents. Believe me, you don't want to look at every single one. Here we will focus on a few general things that you should fundamentally know. For example, the date of publication. That's up in the right-hand corner of the title page. And maybe it's from a pretty long time ago. And what do I do with this? Isn't a standard with a publication date of, let's say, 1987 totally outdated? No. Every standard is taken out of the drawer every 5 years, at the latest, and checked. Is it still current, or does something need to be updated? Is it still being used, or does nobody need it anymore and it should be withdrawn? If it's still up to date and being used, then it will be confirmed for another 5 years. If the standard is revised, then it will be published again and given the new date of publication. This way, every standard, no matter when it was initially published, has been checked and confirmed 5 years ago, the latest. Now, another example. All of these letters that appear before the standard number. DIN, DIN-EN, DIN-EN ISO, DIN ISO, ISO. These letters tell me at what level the present document was prepared and adopted. DIN is a national document prepared and adopted by a national standards committee at DIN. DIN-EN is a European standard which has been developed and adopted by the European level, that is, CEN level. ISO at the international level. European and international standards projects are launched when at least 5 member countries actively participate. That's important. Not all member countries have to be involved. Every EN will automatically become a DIN-EN. This is part of the CEN regulations. This means that an EN may have been adopted and become a DIN-EN without there even being a German committee on the subject. This document, nevertheless, gets our DIN abbreviation, as I said. This is due to the CEN regulations. That's why I would like to encourage you to be a little bit attentive when you see EN in the alphabet soup. The story is a bit different for ISO. An ISO standard is simply just there for the time being. Whether you like it and want to adopt it nationally or at the European level is something that has to be clarified in a second step. That explains why there can be pure ISOs, DIN ISOs, and DIN EN ISOs. There are a few more letters to address because there are other thematic strands in the world of standardization. Electrotechnical issues are dealt with internationally by IEC, at the European level by CENELEC, telecommunications internationally by ITU, and at European level by ETSI, both at the national level by DKE. And there are also other types of documents. These are called, for example, TR, TS, CWA, or DIN spec, but that is not what we are talking about today. Today, we are talking about paying close attention when you see EN in the document's letters. Then you should definitely take a look at the national foreword. There you may find some extras. All the things that have been written, especially for you here in Germany, by your personal experts in the standard committee, so to say, and that are not found in the normal content of the standard. So why national foreword? Well, because there are multiple forwards. Yeah, I know it sounds confusing, but I promise you get used to it. There is one foreword for each level. So a DIN EN ISO has three forewords. An ISO, an EN, and a DIN foreword. And that we need for every EN, the national foreword. Please take a look at the national foreword. It's important. Most of the time, it includes just the obligatory texts. For example, which committee developed it, which one led the secretariat, etc. But sometimes, there's also special information for you here in Germany. Why am I making such a big deal out of this? Because, I mean, come on. Who actually takes the time to read a foreword? A standard is technical literature, kind of like a math textbook. And you don't read such a thing word for word from the beginning to end, but rather kind of like this. Title page, yeah, whatever. Imprint, who cares? Foreword, table of contents, ha. So here I look up my topic and turn to the right page. Boom, don't have much time. Just want to get to the point. Well, that's okay for a math textbook, but not for a standard. So please, again, if a standard has EN in the title, please take a look at the national foreword. And if you find special information here, please pay attention. Little side note, there is another place where your national experts can give you important details in the national footnotes. There are the things that were already mentioned in the foreword, and they have a capital letter N for national in front of the footnote number. But the same applies to footnotes. They are easy to overlook. So now, what types of things are there? I'll give you an example. Just imagine you work for a company that produces air mattresses, inflatable swim rings, and bathing platforms. These items, like so many other products, are produced in advance, usually in the autumn of the previous year. The production went really well and your warehouse is full. Then you get a call from a customer, in this case a retailer, who sells your products in her shops, and tells you that the requirements have changed with the current new edition of the standard, and that the products you supplied may no longer be sold. Probably the already safe bathing platforms will now become even safer bathing platforms or something. And your customer's right in pointing out the changed requirements. But before you just throw everything away, it's worth taking a look at the national foreword. In most cases, you will find a start of application date and a transition period. It tells you how long you're still allowed to produce and sell your products according to the previous standard. In doing so, the standard makes it possible to adapt production within a reasonable time frame. When a new standard is published, it doesn't mean that everything has to be immediately tossed out. Just stay calm and take a look at the national foreword. So, I mentioned something else before. The secretariat, remember? I had said that the mandatory text of the foreword states, among other things, which standards body ran the secretariat. Behind this lies a very intriguing consideration. It has something to do with using standardization as a strategic instrument. Buzzwords being international markets, competitive advantage, etc. I can't wait to tell you more about this next time. Until then, take care and stay curious.